You're listening to 104.3 and 104.7 KHUM, Cutting, Eureka, Arcata, and Orc, and streaming on the web at khum.com. Right now I have John McClelland in here for Redwood National and State Parks. He's a fuel and prescribed fire technician, and you lead most of the prescribed fire efforts.
That's right. I've been at Redwood for 30 years now.
And how long have you been involved with the prescribed fire efforts?
Since 1999. Actually, when I started at Redwood, it was as an engine captain, and one of our duties was to do burn prep up in the Bald Hills and hazard fuel reduction around historic structures. So it started basically the first year I got to Redwood.
Okay, so you're pretty much an expert on this.
Ooh, expert. Well, the nice thing about burning and using fire as a tool is you never stop learning, so I'm always learning as I go.
Well, a lot of people I've been asking around town don't understand why we burn in parks. Why do we burn in parks?
Well, at Redwood National Park, the Bald Hills area is a cultural landscape that Native Americans have been using for, on our records, about 6,000 years. And we have records of them using fire as a tool to achieve their objectives, which was to clear the land, keep it open, allowing them to collect acorns easily, you know, with no grass on the ground, to improve game habitat, to burn for basket materials and things that they would use, you know, to help sustain their life.
Sweet. Well, you already touched on the next part, a lot of the history of burning in the area. Yeah, because that's been going on for thousands of years.
It has. And so during the 1850s, when gold was discovered in Klamath, along the Klamath River, you know, a lot of prospectors came in, and they developed the Trinidad Trail that came over the Bald Hills. A lot of the Native Americans were displaced, and so the practice of burning ended during the Indian Wars. Once that was over, then homesteaders came in, and they actually married a lot of Native American women, and so the practice of burning in the Bald Hills never, well, kind of resumed during the 1860s and 1870s. And so the ranchers also saw the benefit of using fire as a tool, and they would burn their lands to keep Douglas fir from encroaching and keeping their springs open and, you know, improve their grasslands because they needed it for cattle and sheep.
Yeah, and this also helps by having a lot of the prescribed burns. It helps, you know, eliminate a lot of the flammable fuels build up and, like, you know, it allows trees not to be stressed from overcrowding. And I don't know, it just seems to be pretty good for the ecosystem that we have around here.
Right. So what we've studied up in the Bald Hills is the amount of conifer encroachment since the 1850s. And we've mapped out the prairies and discovered that at least 25% of our prairies and grasslands up there are lost through encroachment of Douglas fir. So that was during a time after the 1930s when fire was banned. And you can clearly see from that time how Douglas fir is encroached onto the grasslands. And when Douglas fir comes in, they overtop the oaks, shade out the oaks. You know, the oaks need sunlight. Mm-hmm. And the oaks die, and you just have this continual succession taking place in the absence of fire. And so we try to maintain this landscape as when the first Europeans would have seen it, you know, coming over.
Well, that's super good that you all do that. It helps, you know, manage a lot of the plants. And a lot of trees in this area and a lot of other plants need the fire in order to reproduce.
Well, yeah, the oak woodlands and grasslands are a fire-adapted community. And most of the fires historically would have been very low intensity. They would have been happening probably every year. And when you have fire that frequent, you tend to eliminate any of the ladder fuels that would get up and you know, increase fire intensity. So the fires were pretty gentle, And we try to mimic that too. We burn from the top down, so we have a lot of control over how much fire we put on the ground. And, you know, we're not out there to, you know, kill oaks by any means, but, you know, recognizing that they need fire to keep themselves free of shrubs and trees, we do a pretty good job at maintaining that ecosystem.
What are some of the challenges? I mean, I assume that a lot of people always get afraid that it'll get out of hand. So how do you keep that from happening?
Well, that's two questions. First one, the challenges, as most folks know out there, you know, fire season tends to now run into, you know, late October and November until we start getting rains. And so the challenge there is we have a lot of resources that are not in the area. They're out fighting fire. And also, if there's fires locally producing smoke, we don't want to add more smoke to the airshed. So that would be a limiting factor. Money. Congress has cut fuels funding across the nation to do fuels management, which includes prescribed burning. So that's been a challenge to do. So there's lots of hurdles. And then as far as keeping the fire within its boundaries, we have a burn plan that is like a legal document that we must follow. It has multiple elements in it, from what type of weather we're going to burn under, how many resources we're going to have on hand, contingency plans, medical plans, communication plans that all describe in detail how we're going to conduct that burn. And so we stay within that, you know, we follow that burn plan and the prescription for burning. And we're getting close. We're all feeling, those of us and fire management at the park, that we're getting close to where we should be to start burning.
And you're planning on burning a few places of the Bald Hill section of the Redwood National and State Parks, the Schoolhouse, Coyote, Child's Hill, and Lower Elk Camp?
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. So those are, four units, totaling about 2,100 acres. We have two different types of burns. We have early season and late season burns. And those are divided by early season being before rains, and they typically have hand lines or roads around them, so we can burn it a little earlier, a little hotter, a little drier, and keep them contained. Whereas late season burns, we would wait until there's adequate rainfall for the fire to stop at the forest edge, where there's suitable moisture lingering from the rain. So two different burns. And so this year we have two hot burns and two cool burns, or early and late season. But the schoolhouse burn, this will be our seventh entry. And I think I've been around for all seven of those burns. That's how old I am.
So wow.
We try to burn every 3 to 5 years on a rotation that could kill young conifers.
We don't always get there. It's not how old you are. It's how long you've been involved with this.
It's how good you feel, right?
I guess so, yeah. But go ahead. I apologize.
Yeah, so our main objective is to... kill young trees, conifers, primarily Douglas fir. And we're pretty good at burning. There's no way to really ease how to describe it. But we're good at killing 3 foot and smaller. We have a little more trouble because it is grass killing larger diameter Doug fir. But that's why I come in with crews, and we'll do mechanical fuels reduction.
But this helps the other species also replenish, and the environment needs this.
Yeah. I mean, if you walked in an encroached Douglas fir forest, there wouldn't be much going on. There wouldn't be much ground cover, species diversification. You know, that's not where a lot of animals hang out. You get into an oak woodland, and we have about 247 different species of plants. And that's where everything takes place. You know, the elk hang out in there. They get, you know, they birth in there. You know, the deer and elk and bear eat the acorns. And just everything happens in that oak woodland grassland margin. It's really like the wild kingdom.
So this is very, very natural, what you're doing. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, if there was no fire as a tool in the Bald Hills, then there would be no grasslands and oak woodlands.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get enough lightning fire, natural ignition, to burn through there on its own. People had managed that area for a long time.
If anyone has any questions for John, feel free to go ahead and call in anytime during this. 786-KHUM, that is 707-786-5486. Or if it's easier for you, you can also go ahead and email studio@khum.com as well. Now, how will this burning affect people in the area?
Well, part of our planning is to contact landowners adjacent to our burns up there.
That's smart.
Yes. And they can tell what time of year it is by my phone call to notify them of our plans to burn up near their property. So we make notifications to, the timber landowners up there, the private property owners up there, to local tribes, to our other cooperators with CAL FIRE and Forest Service. And then we have a smoke management plan that we submit to air quality, and which describes how many tons per acre we're going to burn and where the smoke is going to go and things like that. And so they sign off on that. And, you know, that is really the biggest impact, is probably the smoke. The smoke has to go somewhere. And because we live next to that big blue watery thing out there, it's usually an onshore breeze when we burn, which means the smoke goes inland. But, you know, our smoke is pretty short duration. It's usually one big pulse of smoke, and then it's over because the grasslands burn so quickly. But we set up traffic control if we're burning along Bald Hills Road. A lot of times we'll have a lookout present. We have people, you know, guiding traffic through if necessary. But, you know, we're there so infrequently. It's usually maybe a week to 2 weeks out of the year, and then that's it. We're
done.
And
you do all the burning within that short time?
Yeah, we can do 400 acres in maybe 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, burning in grass is like driving a Ferrari. I mean, you better already know, you know, where you're going to burn, where you're going to put fire on the ground, and have, you know, a way to deal with that prior to its happening.
Whereas, how many people do you have out there to manage it?
Most of our burns, we require at least one hand crew of 20 people, along with, ignition folks running the drip torches, and along with overhead, you know, the kind of the command staff, so to speak. Could be 40 people, all told. We've had a crew from Spain come over once. Who was already in the area, and they helped us. They were thrilled to death. Spanish fire practitioners.
Nice. Why were they here?
They were here as part of a tour of the U.S. and visiting different locales, government agencies and private property owners that applied fire to learn from us.
What kind of conditions do you look for before you burn over at the national park?
Well, seasonality. One, we have to wait until after a certain date because of threatened endangered species, which is for us and a lot of our units, September 15th.
How does that threaten endangered species?
The smoke for like the murrelet.
Oh, for birds. Okay.
Yeah, and fisher. But mainly it's the weather. You know, we collect weather when we're getting really close and submit a spot weather forecast to the National Weather Service, and then they in turn give us a very detailed weather forecast that we use for our burn. Within the weather, the biggest impact is the winds. So if our winds are too high, like probably right now they were a little high, we can't burn. We're over our threshold for wind speeds. The nice thing about burning in this area is, again, we have diurnal winds that flow north to east and then east. North to south and then east to west and west to east. So normally we have winds out of the east until maybe 11, 12 o'clock in the morning, and then they die down and then we get the onshore. And that's pretty true everywhere along the coast here. Come about 8 o'clock, the winds die down, and then they come out of the east again. So we usually wait until that wind shift. where we start to get onshore, because you don't want to put fire on the ground and then have a wind shift. That's a no-no, and it's really hard to deal with.
That would make it get out of control, perhaps.
Well, it forces your hand. You want to burn against the wind, into it, and not with it. Because, again, grass burns very quickly, and if the wind is, you're burning with the wind, you have very little control over.
Has any of the prescribed fire burns at the Redwood National Park ever gotten out of hand?
Good question. I mean, that's a question you have to ask, right?
I know, right?
We burned one year in old growth. We had one old growth redwood unit that got up into the trees. Tree either fell over. We're not really sure, but it spotted across the line. We had an east wind event that blew it out of prescription, out of the unit. It burned 300 acres with the wind, pretty much a crown fire. This was in 2003. And once the fog came in, the fire went out, basically.
Well, that was lucky.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you could think of it as a bad thing to have happen. We saw it as an opportunity to study, you know, and learn from, you know, an escape.
Only once in 30 plus years. That's
pretty
good.
Yeah. So you have escape fires and then you have slopovers. And slopover is something that, you know, it spots over a trail or a road. And, you know, resources are there to pick it up. And no harm, no foul, you just keep going. Whereas a spot fire, you know, that's something that, you know, you have to stop ignition and you have to dedicate resources to going to deal with. It could be, you know, some parks, they deal with spot fires for a few hours to a few days. But with us, it's not very common.
And dealing with these, because it's such a lower temperature than like the huge forest fires over there, it's much easier to deal with.
Well, what I say is it's all in the prep.
Okay.
You know, painters say it, I say it. I'm in charge of prepping the units, and so through my lens, I always look at what it would be like for the holding resources to contain this fire. It's not really for anyone else. It's, am I going to make this, you know, miserable for folks on an engine to make sure this fire stays, you know, within the unit? Or can I prep it in a way now so that the fire intensities are low, you know, against the hand lines or roads so that, you know, we have no chance of escape? And so I tend to, you know, look at the piece of ground that I'm going to prep that way, you know, for the holding resources. And so it makes it a lot easier, and it keeps the flow of the burn going. You don't have to stop and wait while they're dealing with something, you know, hazard fuels or what have you, against the line.
Why aren't there more prescribed fire burns
in
the state?
How many hours do you have?
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, the thing is 80% of the oak woodlands and grasslands in Humboldt County are on private property. And the majority of those are on, you know, big ranch lands, you know, from Neyland to Bridgeville to Alder Point, you know, along that whole inland stretch from 1,500 to 4,000 feet. And a lot of these ranches have been in the same ownership for many generations. And they, I'm sure, have stories about Dad and Grandpa going out and burning, and then not being able to burn because of restrictions. You know, you can't just go out and light your grazing land on fire. So reason why they're not burning is they're under state fire restrictions. Though there is a program through CAL FIRE, the VMP program, to allow CAL FIRE to come onto their property and prep and actually implement a burn.
Well, that's smart. You want somebody who knows what they're doing. I'm glad that CAL FIRE has that program.
They do. And, you know, it's been around a long time. It's kind of has its ebb and flow on how successful it is. But it's a very small percentage of what gets burned. These landowners, a lot of them want to do more.
So do they just call CAL FIRE if they want to take advantage of that program?
Yeah, they can. There's a VMP coordinator with CAL FIRE who is their contact, they would contact and help plan for that. But if you consider Redwood National Park is trying to manage about 4,500 acres of prescribed burning, are we really successful? It comes and goes whether we are or not. And then you know, you've got 80% more of the oak woodlands on private property, and which is, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres that need to be maintained either with a chainsaw or with fire. And they wouldn't have the tools that I have, for sure. It'd be much more difficult. So, but that's controversial, you know. Some people like fire, some people don't.
Well, you know, I mean, it's the one thing that's pretty scary. I know that I was camping, because I'm from the East Coast. I didn't grow up in this area. I don't, but I was camping east of here a good ways, and ended up seeing the Cal Fire helicopters doing their drills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was kind of scary to me because I was like, is there a fire around here? Because
right.
I'd never, yeah.
Right.
But luckily they were just doing drills.
So right, okay.
They were using their helicopters to pick up
their bucket.
Water. Yeah, yeah, their bucket.
Yep, they train a lot. They do.
Well, that's good, right? Yeah, so anyway, is there anything else you want to talk about? You know, you mentioned a quote that you wanted to...
Yeah, I like this quote because it kind of nails home why we burn and the need for fire on the landscape. It's from Lucy Thompson, who is a predominant Yurok basket weaver. And she published a book in 1916, and she describes this in the Northwest coast as a necessity for burning. All open prairies were for gathering grass seed, such as Indian wheat, which looks similar to rye, besides other kinds of seed. The Douglas fir timber, they say, is always encroached on the open prairies and crowded out the other timber. Therefore, they have continuously burned it and have done all they could keep it from covering all the open lands. So that was published in 1916. So that kind of is cool, you know.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that quote.
Yeah.
It is cool. 1916, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, thanks for talking to me. That was, if you're just now tuning in, John McClelland, who is the fuels prescribed fire technician for the Redwood National State Parks. So thank you for coming in to talk to me about this.
Thanks for having me.
And they're going to be doing some prescribed fire burning just a little bit later on over near, you know, the Bald Hills section of the Redwood National and State Parks.
Yep.
Do you know when it's going to happen yet?
Well, we're talking about it and we're making notifications. We're dotting I's and crossing T's, and it's still fire season. So we have, our engine is out on a fire right now who... You know, it'd be nice to have at home on our burns. I'm not seeing us being able to burn for at least maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, people happen to be over in that section of the park at that time and were wondering what was going on. Well, that's why this happens.
And we do like the public to come out and watch. Some of the burns lend themselves better, you know, to have a place for public to hang out and watch. Our first burn schoolhouse has a really good site, the Lions Ranch parking area, if folks want to come. Though, you know, we may or may not burn that day. We could plan for it and we could be out of prescription. And so they make that trip up for, you know, not necessarily for nothing. But, you know, we've had school groups come up. HSU comes up all the time.
How do they find out exactly when you're doing it?
So. They can phone myself. They can phone Redwood National Park. And I don't want to get a million phone calls burn day, but they could find out probably through one of the visitor centers would be a good place to start.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, the one in Orrick.
Awesome. And then also send me an email.
I will do that.
And I'll get the word out about it.
Okay.
Sounds good. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and play some messages from some of our sponsors, and then we'll be back into some more tunes in just a moment. You're listening to KM.